And this is the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. Bill Jack from Worldview Academy with us today. And we're coming back to popular culture. Bill, so many of the superheroes have come out of the closet in just the 2 or 3 years previous. And it's hard to know how many. It's Superman Jr. That's the most recent. And now the Eternals. I don't know how many of these superheroes are homosexual or LGBT, quote-unquote, at this point. 150 of them, 640. I've lost track of how many superheroes are sexual deviants at this point. Any theories as to why Marvel and the rest are turning everything over to homosexuality?
Because the homosexual community has to have heroes in order to be legitimate. And they have to have heroes to which people look up. And they want those heroes desperately, and so they cannot find them in the real world, and so they make them up. Well, and we see that. I mean, just recently we named a naval ship after the pedophile.
Yeah, from San Francisco.
From San Francisco, the first openly homosexual who was elected to public office. Mm-hmm. And they have now named a battleship after him.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to have heroes in order to legitimize our positions. And so the obvious place to turn is to those mythical heroes, the comic book heroes, because they embody characteristics and qualities that we admire. And they can't mess up because they're written into the script. So those are the ones that we put on pedestals and to make little kids look up to them and therefore accept their lifestyles.
Well, they're selling a certain moral position, and you know that they're going to paint that which is, you know, their perspective of morality in a certain light. And then the only thing that is rejected by a society that has taken on every perversion in the book and called it good is going to be those who do not call it good and those who stand for God. That is those who say, hey, we're not going to allow for every other ethical theory, every other God into the pantheon. We actually will stand for the true and living God. That will be the only person or the only people that will be persecuted in the next generation. Friends, that's where we are at this point. We're way beyond Dumbledore. That is the Harry Potter mentor and How to Train Your Dragon. These were outed over the last 10 or 15 years, but now it's just about every other superhero now being outed as some form of sexual deviant, not as if there hasn't been sexual deviance in terms of the heterosexual deviance up to this point, but now even more of a perverted approach to life and to encourage children to that end. If you think about it, Bill, there's only one way in which you can reproduce homosexuality. It has to be by heterosexuals bearing children and homosexuals doing Marvel cartoons in which they sell homosexuality to the youth. There's only one way to reproduce yourself if you're homosexual, and that is through your propaganda campaign.
It's recruitment.
Yeah.
It's a recruitment scheme.
Yeah, and grooming.
Yeah, and that's what this is. The Marvel, all of these are just grooming schemes.
An irony, of course, Marvel Studio outed its first homosexual superhero with the Eternals, but the villains in the movie are called deviants, while the superhero is the deviant. That makes sense. In other words, the bad guys are the deviants.
Yeah.
In the movie, but it turns out the hero is a sexual deviant as defined by the truth of God's word. If we're going to go back to the golden standard of God's word being the determinant of good and evil.
So what you're saying is, what are them who call good evil and evil good?
That's right. Put darkness for light and light for darkness.
Yeah.
And of course, it's the deviants that are ugly. Now, here's another selling point for this form of propaganda. Listen to this. If you had a pro-life guy in a story, in a comic book or whatever, if you had a pro-life guy who was ugly and a pro-abortion girl who's beautiful, who would be the hero in the story? Are you with me here? You follow me where I'm going?
Right.
Who would it be? Who would be the hero?
It'd be the one who is attractive.
Yeah, exactly. So I know this is simplistic, but the deviants are presented as evil because they're ugly. You know, let's just say it. We tend to go to superficials.
Right.
So if something is ugly in a story, you know they're probably the bad guy. Whether or not they're doing what is good or what is right or what is wrong, that's immaterial. The point is, in any kind of movie, the ugly guy is almost always the bad guy.
There are exceptions to that, and the exception is, remember E.T.? Yeah. You know, the extraterrestrial?
He was a little bit ugly.
He was ugly, but what happened is it trained us to accept that which is ugly as being beautiful. And it's reminiscent of how Satan can disguise himself as an angel of light. Mm. But when it comes to just human beings, those who are ugly or gross, who are repulsive physically, usually are the ones who are depicted as the villains, right?
Well, the superhero universe is a pagan universe. It's just a reproduction of the Greek paganism. But it is a polytheistic universe. Now, people need to understand that polytheism allows for multiple ethical authorities. And this is very important to understand the worldview of the superhero movie. Polytheistic universes, that is a polytheistic worldview, is a worldview in which there are many authorities. So how would you know what is good and evil or right and wrong in a polytheistic universe in which the gods are fighting it out for a position in which there isn't an ultimate determinant of what is right and wrong, an ultimate ethical authority, an ultimate judge, in which there is no sovereign God, but just polytheistic gods fighting it out for control over this or that. Now, here's an illustration that I can think can help us here. Suppose you had kids who have a hundred moms and dads who all disagree on the rules. Now, that's really kind of neat for kids. I mean, mom tells you, you can't go outside. What does the kid do?
He goes to dad.
He goes, dad. Exactly. Yeah. Now, what's convenient about polytheism, Bill, is that you get hundreds of moms and dads. So while these moms and dads are fighting it out over the rules, guess what you get to do?
You get to go play.
You get to go whatever, do whatever you want to do.
That's right.
Wow, that's fun. So while the gods are fighting it out for ultimate authority and the ultimate determination of good and evil, right and wrong, humans can do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
That's kind of convenient. It's a convenient worldview, and it relieves man of his guilt.
Right.
That's the most important thing it does for him. It relieves him of his guilt. At least it suppresses the guilt ever so much.
Well, he can become his own god because he becomes one of the pantheon of gods.
Well, and he can do that too.
Yeah.
He can do that too. Let's take a look at this pagan world of the Eternals for just a moment before we take a break. I'm not watching the movie, Bill, but I'm just simply saying, you know, this is the movie. Now, I'm guessing a fair percentage of evangelical Christian kids are going to run out and watch the Eternals.
Sure.
That's just what they do. They watch movies and they don't pay much attention to the worldview, but they sit there and just soak it in.
They veg.
They just veg and soak it in, which is kind of sad. But if there's anybody listening to this right now, I think just heads up, this is what you get in the Eternal movie. In this world, it's basically the pagan world of Mormonism. Celestials are an ancient race of entities, multiple entities. These are the gods, okay, that possess vast matter and energy manipulation abilities. Okay, so they're vast, and they can fight it out a bit. There's a bit of pantheism mixed into the worldview as well, because the Star-Lord's biological father is a celestial who controls a humanoid avatar to travel the universe. His planetary form is a living extension of his celestial consciousness, and over the course of many years, he planted thousands of alien seedlings to expand his existence across all life-sustaining planets. In other words, his existence gets planted around. So there's a pantheistic element of this particular god that spreads his own life and existence across the universe. And when the Celestials visited the Earth a million years ago and performed genetic experiments on early proto-humanists, they created two divergent races, the Eternals and the more genetically unstable and monstrously grotesque deviants. So they create both. And it is the Eternals and deviants that fight it out in the movie. Now, what does that give you? Again, Bill, review for us this worldview. What are we talking about here?
We're talking about pantheism. We're talking about you get to be your own god.
Mm.
You're not accountable to the true god of the universe. So therefore, anything goes.
Yeah.
You can create your own world. You become the creator. you are not the created being accountable to the creator.
But you know the argument here. You know the argument people are going to say, it's just fantasy. It's we can do fantasy. Whatever you want to do in a fantasy world. You can construct your own world.
And fantasy, we're not arguing against fantasy. We're not arguing against a particular literary form. What we're arguing against is the worldview that underlies this particular story line and this particular series.
And here's the question. Can a pretend world promote the wrong religion? And is that ethically okay for them to do that? Can a pretend world provide a temporary approval for polytheism, for homosexuality, for bestiality, for rape, for robbery? Well, some of these folks just say, hey, it's just pretend. Get over it. It's just pretend rape. It's just pretend bestiality. It's a pretend universe. We reconstructed the universe and we can do whatever we want in that universe. Friends, you can't get away from the accusation that such storylines are attempts to justify that which is wicked. To pretend even for a moment that such a world can exist out from under the sovereign reign of a one true and only sovereign God is to undermine the admonition, abhor what is evil and hold fast to that which is good. Or to have some kind of acceptance or fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. In other words, we're not to stop abhorring that which is evil, even for a moment while we're reading the fairy tale or entering into the sci-fi universe. We're still not to do that. We're to continue on with abhorring that which is evil. Now, if you're witnessing this evil stuff in this polytheistic universe, and they're trying to sell you a polytheism absent of the sovereign God, then you should abhor that. If you're watching the movie and abhorring it, great. If you're not abhorring it, you got a problem. Be back with more in just a moment on the Generations Broadcast.
What happens when a culture that was established and guided by biblical principles abandons the faith and seeks to live by its own wisdom? In his latest groundbreaking work, Epic, The Rise and Fall of the West, Kevin Swanson unfolds the dramatic history of Western civilization, highlighting the phenomenal impact that Jesus Christ and his people have had upon the thought, culture, and institutions of the Christian West, as well as tracing the slow but devastating decline of Western civilization and the key factors that have led to our spectacular fall over the centuries. A sobering narrative of gospel hope, this book urges its reader to greater fervency in the work of discipleship and the development of an international vision for the church. This is truly a must-read for any Christian seeking to understand the times and seasons in which we live. You can claim your hardcover copy of Epic, The Rise and Fall of the West by visiting generations.org/store today. That's generations.org/store.
And we are back on the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you. Bill Jack also with me. And Bill, one of the verses that keeps coming back to me again and again is 1 John chapter 2, how we're not to love the world nor the things that are in the world. And then it says, the world passes away in its lust thereof, but he who does the will of God abides forever. And this is a principle that I think we as Christians need to go with. Rome, that is pagan Rome, with all its wicked sacrifices and the gladiators and all the bloodshed in the Colosseums, that went away. Pompeii went away.
It's often said that Rome was not built in a day, but it collapsed pretty quickly.
Pretty much collapsed close to a day. It might have been 10 years or something, but yeah, it came down. And that's what's happening in Hollywood. Hollywood is coming down. The world passes away in its lust thereof. Now, that brings up my eschatology just for a moment. But I say, whatever you believe, whether you believe that Jesus is coming back reigning from Jerusalem, or there's a final judgment in which Jesus just pulls the plug, it's all over, the world burns up, and we all go to the final judgment, or whether it's just another Pompeii that goes up in smoke, San Francisco going up in smoke, bottom line is God is sovereign, Jesus is on the right hand of the Father, and this evil does not go on forever. That perspective is critical, isn't it, for the Christian?
Right, right. That every tear will be wiped away, that every wrong will be righted, that justice will be meted out, it will flow down like a river, and that we as Christians will see that judgment meted out by a holy God. And we will experience his grace if we have put our faith and trust in him.
Fret not thyself because of evildoers, nor be envious for the workers of iniquity. They shall soon perish like the grass and wither as a green herb, and you will look diligently for its place. And Hollywood was around. Where were these abortionists? Where did they go? You shall look diligently for its place, and it shall not be found. That's Psalm 37. And there's an irony here. There's an irony. J.K. Rowling, there's a huge irony here. The world is passing away with its lust thereof, but he who does the will of God abides forever. You know, there's a little thing, disagreement between myself and J.K. Rowling. She had a comment about me at one point, and, you know, I was calling her on the carpet for approving of homosexuality by outing Dumbledore. And that was an issue. And I really think that did affect Western culture and it affected children.
Yeah.
And so now it's interesting. J.K. Rowling now, after, you know, what she did to out Dumbledore in 2007, which had a huge influence, I think, on Obergefell. It had an influence on Western culture. If you're looking for a Western leader, J.K. Rowling is responsible for a lot of what we've seen, a lot of this horrible, horrible curse that's come down upon the Western world. And she made $1 billion selling these stories about wizards to kids. She promoted homosexuality by turning Harry Potter's mentor into a homosexual. But now they did the 20th anniversary of Harry Potter and the Harry Potter movie franchise. Okay. And she wasn't invited. She was persona non grata. The world passes away with its lust thereof.
Yeah.
She wasn't even invited. You know why? She failed to support transgenderism.
Right. She drew a line in
the
sand.
She dissed it. She dissed it big time. Then they dissed her.
Of course. Of course, their hero became a villain. Their heroine became a villainess.
In fact, last August, you know, she returned the Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Ripple of Hope Award after Carrie Kennedy released a statement expressing her profound disappointment in Rowling's attacks upon the transgender community. They found that inconsistent with the fundamental beliefs and values of RFK, human rights, and a repudiation of my father's vision. Well, Rowling came back and was deeply saddened, but she said that no award would encourage her to forfeit the right to follow the dictates of her conscience. Well, kudos to J.K. Rowling on that one.
Kudos, because yeah. She understands the right of conscience.
That's right. Well, she's back under the bus with some of the rest of us. Some of the rest of us on this one. The world passes away with its lust thereof, but he who does the will of God abides forever. Fading is the worldling's pleasure with all its boasted pomp and show. Can't remember the way the rest of the hymn goes, but you remember that hymn. Fading is the worldling's pleasure with all its boasted pomp and show. Nothing like seeing Sodom and Gomorrah in the rearview mirror burning up, and that's what's happening. That's what happens to cultures that burn themselves up because they embrace sexual deviance. Here's how I ended my section on popular culture in Epoch, the Rise and Fall of the West. I have seen the wicked in great power and spreading himself like a green bay tree, yet he passed away. And lo, he was not. Yea, I sought him, but he could not be found. In 1977, popular music sold $70 per capita. Adjusted for inflation, that peaked at $78 per capita in 1998. And then the bottom fell out. By 2015, the business had reduced to $21 per capita. This included streaming services and all sales for recorded music. Movie box office sales followed a similar pattern, dropping from 6 tickets per capita to 3 tickets per capita between 2000 and 2020. That represented a major decline from 32 tickets per capita at the peak of Hollywood's influence in 1946.
Wow.
Imagine that. Dropped off from 32 tickets per capita in 1946, down to 3, and I would say after COVID-19, you're looking at maybe 1 ticket per capita. And nobody really cared that the 92nd Academy Awards ceremony gave Best Picture to a nihilist South Korean motion picture called Parasite, basically a film about popular culture eating out the innards of South Korean and Western life. Westerners were supposed to crowd into theaters to hear Koreans mispronounce the F word and explain to everyone the meaninglessness of life and the worthlessness of the film they were watching. It was one of the most unpopular of all awarded films in history. And the 2020 Grammys lavished the green-haired, despondent, apparently suicidal Billie Eilish with 5 awards. Viewership had dropped in half over 8 years. No wonder. Billie's big album sold 343,000 copies in 2019 compared to Michael Jackson's Thriller album, which sold 65 million copies in the 1980s. Pop was dead. The stars received only 0.5% of the popularity the big stars had enjoyed in previous decades. Whatever was left of the aesthetic, the meaningful, the edifying, and the intelligent was all but gone. What survived was the inane, the addictive, and the escapist. The U.S. entertainment industry expanded from roughly $40 billion to $300 billion between 1970 and 2020, but the bulk of the increase came from much expanded television selections, gambling, $140 billion, pornography, $15 billion, and computer gaming, $30 billion. Almost none of this existed in 1970. The size of the illicit drug market was estimated at an additional $120 billion. Big business found ways to manufacture games and gaming to maximize the potential addictions by psychological manipulation to increase market share. It was the first time in history where technology and complex computer algorithms were used to purposefully create addictions for a society in its death throes. It should go without saying that the universally celebrated trivial and disposable culture could never survive for long. Andy Warhol's impression of a Campbell's soup can may have sold for $12 million in 2006, but this art would find its way into the landfills a few decades later. The art itself was intended as mockery of the bankruptcy and meaningless of modernity. At the fall of the West, the sheer size of the pyre, the magnitude of the burning and the burnout was beyond anything previously recorded in world history. The degree to which modern man, including much of the Christian world, had received the humanist nihilist worldview was hard to fathom. The self-deception was very deep. As already covered previously, statistical studies found that not much of the Christian worldview was left anymore in the minds of professing Christians. The Christian worldview had been extricated from the churches, schools, universities, media, entertainment, and cultural productions. The whole of Western cultural institutions had been corrupted by the anti-Christian zeitgeist, defined more by Sartre, Nietzsche, Darwin, Marx, and Kant. There wasn't much left of the Christian heritage in the West, at least from the perspective of those who still retained the basics of a Christian world and life view. By analogy, the cultural mainland was nuked, but islands of culture would still survive. Where Christians dragged the polytheistic fragmentation of the forms into the music of the church, where pure romanticized primal emotionalism prevails, and where the pride of performance and the triviality of popular culture was preferred, none of it would survive what followed. During the previous 500 years, there had been conditions under which some Christian synthesis with foreign worldviews still provided sustainable culture and faith, but during the cultural conflagration of the 21st century, attempts on the part of the Christians to synthesize in the zeitgeist amounted to nothing more than rank apostasy and pure suicide. Those Christian elements which clung to the wasted forms of a degraded culture could not possibly survive. Yet, where Christian pastors disciple the next generation by the investment of thousands of hours in a biblical way of thinking, over 10 years in private homes, the church would survive and thrive. Wherever honor for historical orthodox theology and practice existed, where the fear of the Lord was still regarded as the beginning of wisdom, and where the honor of fathers and mothers broke through by the grace of God, healthy culture would develop on the islands of culture. Where there was a holy reverence for God and honor for cultural forms of the past, some folk art survived. Where shallow, meaningless gospel was pasted over a meaningless postmodern worldview, nothing could survive. Where there was no hard and fast antithesis sent against the philosophies of the world, Sardis was dead and dying. Where men disappeared and only women and immature children were left to lead the church and culture, this would not survive. But where the ideas of the public schools, public media, universities, apostate philosophers, Greeks, astrologers, and the wizards that peep and mutter were thrown out, and where true repentance and renewal of mind came about according to the radical teaching and straightforward preaching of the Holy Scriptures, something survived. Preaching and teaching came first, followed by repentance, then some islands of culture developed. As the Lord tarried, Christians would plant the gardens in the ashes of Western civilization and build the next Christendom on its ruins, and where the primary purpose of music and culture was to express gratitude and praise to God rather than to provide entertainment and superficial emotional comfort or to suppress reality, the islands would flourish. There it goes. Well, that's the end of my section on the rise and fall of Western culture. Friends, you need to get the full book at generations.org. It's called Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West, available at generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson and Bill Jack, and we invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.